Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
I'm Janet Gallen, and we welcome you to
Love Letters Live.
Excuse me. This is a place to open your heart, to speak your mind, and to state your case. This is a show above all about gratitude, gratitude felt and gratitude expressed to someone.
And it's about love letters. It can be for anyone at any time for any reason.
Thank you. And it can do so many things. One of the things I've noticed about love letters I've been a part of and helping people write them is that the response is so often from the person who's received it, and in particular older parents, but across the board, is, I didn't know you knew that about me, or I had no idea that you would remember that. And the gift is having paid attention.
Mm-hmm. Love letters can be romantic, or they can be about absolutely anything at all. They're a joy to receive and often an even greater joy to send.
And the point of them, as Teresa and I see it as a rule, is that a love letter is a one-of-a-kind gift designed by you for someone. And that is really the beauty of it. It's not going to be duplicated. It's not going to have to be returned. And it's going to be as good on the rereading as it is on the first reading. It's going to be as wonderful 10 years later and as true 20 years later as the day you first read it or wrote it.
Mm-hmm. Every week on our show, we have terrific guests, and we have another one today. Janet, who's our guest?
Our guest today is Julie, who is the vice president of a large bank. She is a wife and also a fairly new mother of a beautiful boy, an angel of 15 months. And I'm going to go right to, she's smiling and sparkling eyes at the mention of her beautiful boy. I can understand why. I'm going to go right to the usual question, or my first question is, what are the challenges in life that you have faced? What are the gifts you've received that you didn't expect? What are some of the joys that you have had along the way? And we've all had, most of us have had all of them.
Oh, yes. There's so many. It's hard to think. But being here in the middle of San Francisco reminds me that San Francisco has been the greatest blessing for me. Coming from central states, I had never been exposed to such diversity and cultures and new ways of thinking and appreciation. And so when I came here, so many folks, strangers, took me under their wings and gave me an opportunity to reach out.
Talk for a minute about how old you were when you came and what drew you here and what was your experience as you got off the train, a newcomer here, dressed in your own ways and with your old attitudes. What were you like? What was the Julie like then?
The biggest thing that was different between me then and now is that I was not aware that I was different. I was very Pollyanna. I was very, I was nicknamed the Breck girl. You know, I interviewed in a very red suit and, really made a statement and, just kind of my ignorance worked for me because I took on things that I wouldn't have if I would have known all the facts. I never would have moved to San Francisco if I would have known the realities of how expensive it was, how I didn't know anyone here, how my family couldn't help me here. And so all I had was a resume in very large type with no experience.
Written all over it.
Yes. And I was just really at the mercy of strangers to give me a chance. And it was that drive, that ambition, that openness to do anything that really I think people were attracted to and wanted to give me a chance to make it work.
And so they did.
And they did in a big, big way.
And so how did life go after that?
Well, I got a job in real estate. No background in real estate, no comfort level with numbers, and here I am putting together analysis for appraisers to make decisions based on my information. And so I proved to myself that I could do anything I set my mind to, but it wasn't my strength. And so I always knew that marketing was my strength, and so
May I just ask you?
Sure.
You say you always knew.
Always.
How did? Yes. At what age? I mean, when did you first get a glimmer of that? As a
preschool.
Oh, and how did it, what form did that take?
Preschool. I vividly remember organizing the beanbag toss. The boys will line up here. The girls will line up here. This is the line. These are the rules. I would explain these things.
Oh,
and
I like
definitely preschool. And they would call my mother and they would say, you know, Julie, she's so dressed up today. And we are actually, you know, making Play-Doh. And we'd hate for her to ruin this dress. Well, I wouldn't. I didn't have play clothes. I didn't want them.
Oh, that was your choice.
My choice. My choice to be dressed for the occasion, ready with a plan, directing folks, and then definitely had a nap
this is
that
so
afternoon.
Just wonderful, because how early the you appears in life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you got back to your own trail.
Yes, my own trail. You mean back in San Francisco,
uh-huh.
You mean? Well, exactly.
When you said
so,
you wanted to go into marketing, I got you off the track.
Right,
here.
Right. So, of course, my resume now had some experience, but it was in an area that marketing, PR, communications firms could not appreciate. So I whited all that out and went and volunteered and got event experience, communications experience.
Good for you.
And did that for as long as I could. So you don't live long in San Francisco without a paycheck. So I interviewed with banks, and I felt so good about the company that the people make the difference for me, not the job. So got right in there, did my number crunching, and then was given the opportunity to create my own marketing position within an established unit. And that's what I've been doing for 12 years.
So excuse me, some you blossomed here. And if you're a different enough person, or an extension of what you were meant to be anyway,
mm-hmm.
that if you went back home where you grew up, what would you be like there? I mean, how would people receive you there? And have you ever done that?
You know, it's interesting. I almost feel less received because there is one way of doing things back home. And if you even suggest another way of doing things, or perhaps another viewpoint or something, then it's not really embraced.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are a lot of things that are certainly the same. And what I try to do is exercise that same non-judgment that I first experienced here in San Francisco when I go back and realize that they haven't been out of the boundaries of that town.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all that they really know. And so it's easy for them to do what everybody else does and not think about the impacts on other people.
So, excuse me, marching ahead a little bit, you dated, you kind of grew up here a lot as a
yes.
single woman, and you worked, and you talk about that for a minute as this...
Well, it's so funny.
Unexpected particular joy entered your life.
Well, I recently saw in the paper that San Francisco is the number one place for dating, and I died. I was like, you've got to be kidding. I couldn't find a date for nothing.
And by the way, again, I wish this were television, because you should look at this young woman who says, I couldn't find a date for nothing. She is gorgeous. She does look like the Brett girl. She's got sparkling, shiny, pale blue eyes and sleek, shiny blonde hair and a smile and a radiance. I don't know who wouldn't want to date this, but anyway,
well,
go
you.
Ahead.
Thank you. No, it was very, very difficult. And so, you know, I really kind of dove into work because my strength was my experience. And so I took on anything that they would give me. And then I started getting to a place realizing that now I don't have the time to date, working these hours, traveling the way I'm doing. So I've got to make time to date. And so I put it out there. I'm ready to date, and I booked my calendar.
The planner.
Yes.
Is ready to date.
Exactly.
Calendar
I am now
open.
Ready. I am now ready, and I expanded my one-strike rule to three strikes, so it had to be three solid strikes before I could not say yes to a second date, because it's not fair to expect fireworks the first time you meet someone. They could have a bad day. You could have a bad day, and then just not be engaged. So they had to be very solid strikes. And I got dating.
Nothing
like
superficial.
Oh, major. I had more dates. I had a lot of fun. And I took risks that I never would have done.
Like what?
Oh, like...
if I may.
Yes. I thought I wanted to go back to my roots because I couldn't find someone in the city that had the roots. And so I thought I needed to date a Texas cowboy. because I was into this two-stepping thing. And so I met this Texas cowboy, and we had a great old time in Houston with the live band and this and that. And he was quite the gentleman. And
you were traveling for work, is what?
Yeah.
So you were in Houston.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was in Houston, and he invited me to, what are we going to do next? And we ended up meeting in Vegas. And didn't know this gentleman well enough to accept that kind of invitation. But I did it, and I'm glad I did. So I stepped way outside of my comfort level, mm-hmm. and seeing if these were the right people for me. And it certainly allowed me to make two lists with planning. I make lists. there's my like to have list and my have to have list.
Uh-huh.
And when I was set up on a blind date, who ultimately became my husband, I found it very quickly. I would say in the first month that he filled both lists.
Oh, how nice.
So when that happened, I was very happy.
And then there's chemistry. I have a friend, Perry Livermore, who once said, chemistry is not negotiable. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, that's kind of true. Something's either there or it isn't. You can't force it.
Well, it's true, but you got to give it a chance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't have fireworks that first night, you know, but actually the getting to know each other and what was important to him and our dates were all around his family. I mean, he introduced me to his family and our second date.
Well, he must have known something for him maybe quicker than you did for you.
He won't admit.
That's clear from
perhaps,
what you're saying.
Perhaps. It's been the best ever. Okay. So
wonderful. Just a quick time out before we get to Julie's letter to remind you that you are listening to KUSF 90.3 FM, Love Letters Live. We hope you'll tune in every week. And if you can't tune in every week, you can catch all of our past programs on our website at www.loveletterslive.com. Just click on past programs and they're all there, including today's.
So, back to Julie. And my question is, who gets your love letter today?
Well, surprisingly, not my husband. From all
maybe
of that.
He'll get another one.
Right. No, I'm at a place where I'd like to thank my mother for her contribution to who I am today. And since I've been in San Francisco, I have been running so fast, making a life here and this and that, that I'd like to take a time out and thank her for that.
That's just wonderful and really so to the point of what love letters are for.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about what you do. Well, let me ask you then, just straight to it, what are the three things you most want her to know, even if you've said them before? What are the things you want to say to her? And I gather that you're thanking her for, I don't know, well, I don't want to say
well,
anything.
Well, I don't
you
know.
Say.
I mean, I don't know if I've evolved enough to segmenting them out to three different areas.
Well, let's try, because a letter means you put specific things on paper, and that's
right.
Important to know. So what would you be thanking her for? What would you be acknowledging as her strengths? What are the things you would thank her for? What has she taught you? What has she given you maybe genetically?
Mm-hmm.
What has she given you by an example of not how to be?
Mm-hmm. Well, my mother is a beautiful entertainer and very hospitable and a very beautiful, attractive woman. And there was never a time that she'd come pick me up from school that I'd be embarrassed. She'd never show up in her rollers and her sweats. I mean, That was very nice. And it's a little thing, but when your mom's driving carpool, it's a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's nothing more embarrassing than being seen with your mother at a certain time in your life, right?
In her workout song.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right.
What does she look like? What did she look like? I know she's older.
She was always, you know, very trim and stylish and, just very put together. She was an incredible cook, and she taught.
You remember things that she cooked?
Yeah,
like what,
she taught us cooking. Meatloaf before I went ice skating. What was wonderful about my upbringing, I was exposed to the best of everything, and I believed because of them that I could do anything. And so I did my best to try to do it all. I was in horseback riding and ballet and ice skating and tap dancing. And I knew I was going to the Olympics in snow skiing, ice skating, and gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And as I got older, I decided to hone in on ice skating. And I went to practice at 4 in the morning.
Did she take you?
Every day. But she did not take me, but she made sure I had a hot breakfast before I left. And she'd wake me up every morning, and she'd drive me to state competitions. And we had a fun time together, and I always got last. I was olive oil on ice. I didn't have the muscle to do anything. And we'd just go shopping. And that never came up, and she never pressured me to quit. And I remember the morning in junior high school when I decided to take on cheerleading that I wasn't going to ice skate any longer. And she was like, thank you. You know, thank you. But she would sequins my dresses and paint my boots for competition. And it was really, you know, wonderful. And that independent competition, I think, has a lot to who I am today. I kind of struggle corporately with the team approach because I'm very self-reliant. And I'm trying to reach out more in trusting my team members.
So you really have a lot to look back on that
yes.
she gave you.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, now I think of what are the things that I want to keep. And I want to make sure that I don't embarrass my son when I pick him up. I want to make sure that I teach him how to cook and to iron and all of those things. I want him to be exposed to any kind of sport or, you know,
well, it sounds like she really
like
let
do.
You do what you wanted to do mm-hmm. and joined you in that, even though it was inconvenient for her.
Yes.
Hot
yes.
breakfast at 4 a.m. every morning.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes,
I would be
yes,
guiding my
yes.
children possibly into a checkers tournament.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So these are the things you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And are there things, are these things you have not said to her yet?
No. Have not said these things to
okay,
her.
So that's really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm
and is because sometimes
maybe lightly, mm-hmm. you know, I've touched on a few things, but
she doesn't have it in her hand.
No, and I haven't taken the time out to make a real point of it.
Mm-hmm. And so, any particular reason that? I mean, I see from the look on your face that is something that might be hard.
Well, yes, yes, I mean it is very difficult because my mother is a difficult mother to love.
In what way?
And
by the way, before you say
yes.
that I think a love letter that's written in the face of difficult to love is one of the most beautiful kinds because you're having to dig through the yuck to get
yes.
to the gold.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean the gold's not there and that you shouldn't be aware of it.
Well, and that's what I want to acknowledge. There's two sides to every coin.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been on the reverse side of the coin for so long that I want to flip that coin over as
what does that mean, been
well,
on the flip president?
I want to see the good mm-hmm. instead of the bad because, you know, living in anger or frustration or it's just I'm tired of it. My mom is not going to change. I have.
Well, what's her state now that you say she's?
Well, she's irresponsible. She doesn't live an adult life in terms of taking care of herself, paying her bills.
Has this been for a while?
A long time.
Oh.
It's difficult for me because she had more money than I'll make in a lifetime,
mm-hmm.
and through very foolish. Decisions, she now has nothing. And that's hard, you know. That's very hard when she lives in subsidized government housing for, less than $50 a month. And you can't pay that, you know.
And why is it she can't pay that?
Well, because...
She has Social Security income, right?
Yeah. Thankfully to my father for paying that for her, because she was a house mother for all of my life.
Very,
so,
very busy one, evidently.
Very
you've got
busy
you've
one.
Got brothers and
yeah.
sisters, too,
so
right?
So she had a full household of seven altogether at different stages. So she's never had to worry about money. Mm-hmm. She has always had, you know, someone paying those bills for her. And she has never had to suffer the consequences of her actions around money. But now on a very fixed income, when she makes foolish decisions, she doesn't have enough money for rent.
So what are the kind of foolish decisions that...
Well, she is...
a person could make. At
well, she's established relationships with callers for lotteries. And she is sending checks away in hopes for the big return, you know, and it's just foolishness. And it's really a gambling kind of addiction in hopes that something too good to be true is going to happen. And recently, my sibling saw her bank account statement with checks going all over the world. And the FBI actually got involved and interceded a check that was going across the Canadian border and said, you have to stop her. And they've talked to her, change your checking accounts, change your phone numbers. You are now, you know, in an area that will require you to, you know, change these things. And that was over a year ago, and she still hasn't changed her ways.
So you talk about anger. Is part of this just that she is not taking care of herself and won't let anyone else do it either? I mean, the way you are angry at someone you care about?
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But the compassion comes from realizing that in today, when I grew up, in coming out to San Francisco, there were people and counselors and programs that help you deal with tragedies in your life. And I don't think those services were available to her growing up through her life. And so she's never adopted the tools of healthy living in terms of taking care of herself first and realizing that she is worthy and deserving of something as simple as a roof over your head. You know, so she is still thinking, you know, I'm going to help the poor orphanage children if that's what the man on the phone says her money's going to, or I'm going to, you know, make up for not sending my youngest to college and I'm going to get that check and send him instead of going, I need to make sure that I pay my own rent, my own utilities, and then if I have something left over and I'd like to give it, then I can.
So in addition to everything else, this cannot be easy for Julie the planner.
Oh.
To have both your hands tied, that's got to feel worse.
Because I could plan it very well.
I know you could. I know. And so she's resistant to it.
Well, I think she's in a place of being very fearful, paranoid, scared that people are going to come in and take over. And even, even you know, she doesn't even trust her family, that we want her best interest and we want her to live in peace and volunteer and have a good time and... You know, just make the best out of life. And I feel like she's given up on life. So hopefully, perhaps, you know, this letter may encourage her in some way to speak through her to just, you know, take care of the most simple things in life.
And I was going to ask that. Do you think, you know, is she so aware of what she's doing even? Maybe yes, maybe no. But will she know what you're talking about?
Yes.
The memories will...
Yes. She lives her life in the memories.
Okay.
She's
so
not in today.
So the sequin booth for ice skating will really...
Oh, tickle her. Yes. Okay. She calls me and leaves me messages every time she flips through the channels and sees Lawrence Welk, that she remembers when I go and get my tap shoes and dance along with Lawrence Welk.
So she's doing exactly what we were just talking about before as one of the byproducts of love letters, which is, I didn't know you remembered that.
Right.
So, I mean, you look... touched that she remembers something about
right.
you.
Uh-huh. Oh, sure.
Aren't we all? Yes.
Yo, sure.
So let me ask you, curiosity because I know what kind of style, and I've seen some of the work you've done, and you're just a one-ring circus yourself sometimes. What stationery will you use that will appeal to her visually as soon as she sees it on the pile of mail?
Well, I don't know.
What would she like?
I don't know. I mean, she'd probably want to frame it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about some of the poems that I've done, you know, professionally that were on a really kind of in a bright colored with, you know, trim and said in a way that she could really look to.
Well, you know, you just touched on something. Oh, yes. Important, I think.
Well, yeah, one-page calligraphy.
But also, when I'm saying what kind of stationery, and the next question is, of course, the envelope. So if you think, anybody thinks, that has reason to think, that what you send might end up in a frame, it's worth putting it in an 8x11 envelope
right.
and not creasing it.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
And let
right.
it really go right to the frame or scrapbook.
Right.
If you know it's going to be slipped inside a Bible or a desk drawer, it can be folded.
Right, 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 right.
That's a really good point. I'm
right.
glad
no,
you brought
I,
that
it's
up.
It's almost more presentation style, maybe even laminated. I don't think it'll happen again.
Okay, well, that you know what? That's fine. Once is beautiful. And the other thing I want to ask you about
yes.
is in saying this, and I know what a realist and what a planner you are, is we look with older parents to the time that they won't be here anymore. And I feel very strongly about sending obituaries to friends and family as love letters. Write it now and send it as a love letter. Why should people have to wait till they're gone before they know how you feel about them? So, by culling all this material,
right.
you'll have something beautiful to say forever.
Right. Well, exactly. And but I do be careful of that. I mean, I agree, but I think that I don't want her to think that I am wishing her away.
No.
And I have to be very sensitive of that, you know, with her. So I want to make sure that the tense that it's written in, you know, is positive.
Well, there's nothing past,
and,
yes.
You know, I just have to watch for
but
that.
But the material that you
right.
glean is what you want to
right.
be able to say about a person when that person's no longer here. Let a person shine at that person's best
exactly.
forever.
Exactly.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Julie, thank you so much for enlightening us so much about being so open, enlightening us about aspects of human nature. And I could certainly relate to some of the things that you were saying. And we want to thank all of our listeners for joining us. We hope you'll tune in every week to KUSF 90.3 FM. We encourage you to put your loving sentiments into words and send them while you still have the chance.
And if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, just remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion.
So until next week, with love from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye.